hunting for that magical genie with piles of cash? Join Candace and her guests as they uncover financial secrets, have a laugh at past mistakes, and savor financial rebounds. Thank you for listening. Let's dive in and do something today that your future self will thank you for.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Money Flow Genie podcast. I'm so excited to have Shannon Sherman here today. I've been with her as colleagues in the multifamily world. And Shannon, do you want to give us a little bit of an intro about yourself? And welcome to the Money Flow Genie podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Well, I'm Shannon Sherman. My husband and I do ST4 Equity together. We have primarily shifted into the industrial flex world. We have a couple multifamily properties, but we're kind of finding in this climate, we were lucky enough to align with our partner, John Sidoti. And he was doing his thing in industrial flex, and we kind of jumped on his coattails. And now we are currently raising for our fourth property together right now.
Oh, wow. Okay. So for our listeners that don't know, the SC4, what is that?
For equity. So that's like our, that's our company.
Your company name. Okay. It's not like a code of a type of investment. It's your company name. Okay. All right. I wanted to clarify that. And then if you could also, when you say industrial, that's a really big picture. Is that like Amazon storage? Like, what is that when you say industrial?
Okay. So we do like industrial flex. So no, we're not like big Amazon type stuff. I think we're sticking to about 50,000 square feet. You know, some of our properties, one tenant will want 3 or 4 bays. And the perk to this is we can take the walls out, fix, do whatever they want. So they sign a lease with us. Our leases are 2 to 5 years. And then they say this is what we want to build out to. It's a triple net lease. So they're responsible for, you know, whatever they need to build out, you know, we approve it and they can do with their space as they need. For example, our property in Williston, North Dakota. I don't know if you've ever heard of it there,
but no, I have not.
You probably haven't. And I hadn't either when we did this. In fact, John brought this like, Williston, North Dakota. I have never heard. And he's like, yeah, I hadn't either, but this is a huge gas and oil town. And we're like, okay, this is our shining star property. All of our, or not the majority of our tenants are, you know, have something in the oil or gas industry. One of our tenants, we were there a couple weeks ago and he was showing us his drill bits for the gas. I had no idea that it's kind of like, they'll hate that I said this, but it's kind of like the Landman. Do you watch Taylor Sheridan's Landman?
I have not seen that. Tell me about that.
Are you a Yellowstone fan?
Yes.
Okay. Same writer. This is another one of his series. So if you like him, which I love Yellowstone, you will like Landman as well. So that was the only like point of reference I really had. We got up there and they're like, did you watch Landman? We're like, of course. Right? It's Taylor Sheridan. And they're like, yeah, we watched for 20 minutes and it's nothing like what we do up here. But these are the most down-to-earth, hardworking people. Williston is like, I'm from Arizona, so anything that's like below 70, I'm gonna need like a hoodie for. They're like out there, you know, in -20 with the ice, and they are like hustling and working, or you don't last up there. That's just like really, really like amazing, like hardworking people. Just really inspiring to be around.
You would not think at all about real estate in an area like that.
No.
So if I were to think about it, like where I am, the big, something that's done very well here, and it's, you know, zoning also limits it, is that most people are working class, they have their small businesses, but they don't have a place to park their equipment. So it sounds like a similar thing where it's construction bays that you are storing your equipment for, and we call them here tradesman parks, is what we call them.
Okay.
And same thing, that people, they run their businesses either in them or it's where they operate and do whatever they need to do. So it sounds like this guy is like, this is where he works on his equipment and has and stores all of his huge drill bits to be going into the earth to do the mining or whatever type of drilling that they do.
Yeah. With this particular gentleman, he was like, you know, I only spend like maybe like a half an hour a day here because, you know, I'm out, I do stuff from home. Super nice gentleman. You know, he was happy to show us his stuff. One thing, like John, our partner, he, you know, really tries to establish like relationships with our tenants. You know, mm-hmm. we want to make sure everyone's happy. It's because we are in these long leases, you know, we want everyone to be happy. We want to be amicable with everyone. So yeah, it was really neat. We had coffee with another tenant of ours the next morning. But yeah, I had no idea. Like, I'd never been to North Dakota before. I never thought much of North Dakota. I mean, it was just kind of, I like obviously warm weather. That's why I'm in Phoenix. So, you know, hearing the negative weather, I was like, oh gosh, I don't know. Like, this is going to be a hard trip. And I can't wait to go back. These super, like super friendly, just make you feel like at home, people you want to hang out with, people you want your families to be around. I don't know. It was just, I was like, I can't wait to come back here.
I love that. One of the great things I find about real estate, first of all, is so when that's such an umbrella, the term real estate, and people don't realize mm-hmm. how much of a niche that you can go down in, that it isn't just multifamily. It isn't just single family. There's so many bits and pieces to it that you could find that like this. I would never in a million years have thought about this as a real estate strategy to invest in, and the tenant base, like how would someone find all of that? That's fantastic.
It's
opens
great.
The mind again, you know, to think more. And now driving down the streets, as people listening to this podcast, driving along going, wow, I don't know what kind of real estate to invest in. You'll start to look at everything that's out there.
Yeah. Trevor and I, my husband and I, we started in single family. I think like the most, you know, like the majority of people probably do. Because when you think of real estate, you don't ever think you could buy an apartment complex,
right,
or at least I didn't. Maybe, you know, other people thought differently, but you know, we started with our single families, and then you kind of get to a point where you're like, I kind of like this. This is cool what I'm doing, but at least in our case, that's when we started like the multifamily. But unfortunately, you know, in the last few years, multifamily has been a hard niche to be in. And we're okay, so our single families are all doing amazing stuff. So do we go back to that, or what do we do? And then we met John, and that kind of opened up our eyes to what else is out there. And yeah, it is. I don't know. I get bored easy, so it's kind of nice to have like something different to talk about.
Nice. I love that. Before we go deeper into like the whole financial journey and how you got into real estate, I have what's called the Self-Praise Showcase as part of the podcast. And that's where I want to hold for you and to hold a space for the audience as well. We're not taught that we can boast about ourselves. And there's a lot of things, like little things, big or little, doesn't matter. But it's just like that one stepping stone. It's like, wow, I really did that. And to be able to share that and hold that space with you. So the floor is yours to share about anything that you want to share about that you feel like is just a nice accomplishment that you're really proud of yourself for.
Well, it is hard to... Yeah, that is hard. The one thing that kind of comes to my mind, so I have four kids, you know, almost 20, 16, 12, and 9. And my career before, you know, being in real estate I was a physician assistant. So when I just had my older two kids, and my husband's an airline pilot, and you know, everything's seniority based. And at the time we lived here in Phoenix and he was based in Chicago. So when I was in PA school, I just had my older two kids. So I had a 3-year-old and a baby, and PA school it's intense. You know, he was gone. I think he was home like 36 hours a week because he was commuting from Chicago, and I had these two little babies. And just getting through PA school was, I didn't do it well. My grades were not, you know, I was not like a 4.0 student at all. I think I barely passed, but like, I think it was like, you have to get a 70% to pass. I think I was like right at a 70%, like most of it. I gained all kinds of weight. It was bad, but I passed with these two little kids. And I think I have like some PTSD around that time in my life, but I do feel like that was probably.
That is amazing. Are you kidding me to do that? The intensity to be, first of all, you passed. You know, the one thing to think about in that scenario is that to be able to be present as a mom, that takes a lot. Whenever you have children, you're just 24/7 thinking about them and being with them and guiding them. And then you're having to put all of this extra information in your head and sort it and then be able to regurgitate it in the way that they're teaching you that you have to, instead of the way that your brain works. I say big hats off to you for that.
Well, thank you. I mean, I wouldn't say like at any point in that I did everything well. Like, you definitely, I'm a believer that, you know, you can do everything in like, in time phases or whatever. So I definitely was not on my A game in any one part of my life at that point. But thank you. Like,
that's accomplishment. It's funny, I'm hearing you, and if you don't mind, I want to use this as an example. You just said something that you're proud of yourself for, but yet at the same time, I'm hearing you not be so proud. I think that was a big accomplishment.
Thank you. It's like, I don't think you could ever pay me enough to go back to those two years.
No. It's like, been there, done that. Let's move on. And clearly, you all are doing extremely well from where you were just recently talking about the struggles of being in that. And
Thank you. I just think that's fantastic.
Let's go back quickly to the real estate aspect. And, you know, the podcast is about our financial journeys. How did you end up like getting into real estate as like your so-called asset class for financial wealth? Like, what was your journey?
It's funny, when we had our oldest son, we lived in a condo because at the time it was like very post 9/11. My husband was getting ready to be laid off of an airline, and we bought a condo because that was what we could afford if he got laid off. And everyone's like, I can't believe you're having a baby in an apartment. And we're like, well, you know, you have to do what you have to do, right? This is what we can afford. Like, if we have to go work at Jack in the Box or whatever there is. And my father-in-law is like, no, that's fine. He's like, so what you're going to do, he set a very good like example, as far as like, he was a wonderful businessman. He, you know, always was like researching and figuring out what to do. He said, that's fine. He said, what we're going to do is, you're going to buy a house every 2 years. You're going to live in this house for 2 years. And then in 2 years, you're going to move to, you know, a little bit bigger of a house, and then you're going to keep this one. And if you can't, I'm going to help you. And then just every 2 years, you're going to just move and we'll just go a little bit bigger. And he said, you know, I'll help you. Like, we'll find renters and I'll help you. I had no idea that, like, I was just kind of along for the ride. So we had this condo. We lived in it for 2 years. And at the end of the 2 years, we moved into a house, not a huge house. It was, I think it was like maybe 16 or 1800 square feet, nothing, you know, but we kept the condo. Our first renter was a mess. He bounced every check to us. He took his like cigarettes inside and burned everything. He left his car. We learned everything you don't do with a renter. You name it, we did it wrong. First, right off the bat. So everyone said, well, okay, you're going to sell this, right? And you're going to, like, why would you do this again? And we're like, no, we're going to keep doing this. Like, we've learned now. You can't go much further down than what we did. Like, you know, we had all, like, we were getting paid. We were paying for the bounce checks. We were like, it was a mess. So like, there's nothing else left. So we moved into this house and we had, so right, I think this is around 2008. So we're in this, it was a new built house. And that's when I got into PA school, but it was also 2008. We couldn't sell this house either. So we moved up to, we were in Tucson at the time. We moved up to Phoenix for me to go to PA school. We couldn't sell the house. We had to keep it because, I think it dropped by 50 or 75, you know, and like that was a lot of money for us at the time. Like that was a huge amount of money. So we moved up here for PA school. We had to rent something up here, but we had our condo and our house in Tucson. You know, we rented for several years. I graduated PA school. You know, we had a couple more kids. And then finally we're like, okay, now we're going to stay here. Now it's time to buy something. But we still had our two places in Tucson. So we bought something and we're like, hey, you know, the market's come back a little bit. And, you know, my father-in-law is like, yeah, let's just keep doing what we're doing, right? Like, you guys have two houses now. He helped us pay those off. They were cash flowing great because now they're paid off. Right, so right. Yeah, so then we're like, okay, well, you know, this is going good. Let's buy something up here. And then we just kind of kept going for a while. And then at a certain point, we're like, well, we can only go so far. Like, and then a friend of mine was like, hey, I'm going to this multifamily conference. Have you like looked at apartments? And I was like, oh, maybe. Like, tell me a little bit about it. Because it kind of comes to the point where it's like, you know, maybe you buy like two houses or condos a year, mm-hmm. but you're still kind of only doing a little bit. So I was like, you know what? It's summertime in Phoenix and you're telling me we were going to go to like Denver for a weekend. I'm in. Worst case scenario, you know, I'm getting out of the heat. I could use a little bit of a break from around here. This would be fun. So we went, her and I both joined the program, and that's kind of from there, like, you know, we've done a few multifamilies. And then we met John, and, you know, it's amazing because once you start like kind of thinking about like what else is there, mm-hmm. you know, there's tons of other like asset classes, you know, there's people who've done great in self-storage, even single family is doing good again now. So
yeah,
I don't feel like I'm like, obviously like we're doing industrial is like doing well with us right now, but at the same time, like you always should be looking about, you know, what else is out there? What else can you, you know, you want to diversify.
Yeah. That's one thing that I've noticed, that a lot of people, they teach their particular strategy in real estate and mm-hmm. as if it's the only thing. And I like to diversify my portfolio in real estate. I don't have to know real estate. I don't need to go. I don't really know the stock market. I know it works. I know a lot of people that do extremely well, but that's,
yep.
I like to be able to have something tangible. It's the way my brain works. I can understand real estate. And then with little bit, you know, you don't realize how much just owning single family, how much you really know about managing other types of real estate. Yes, they're the little nuances within each one, but you do have that base foundation. Once you've been a landlord, you really understand. And even be a renter, we also understand, oh, this is how I would like my tenants to feel. This is yep. what my tenants need. So you have both worlds that you can see what is needed and blend the two together, and you can have a successful business. And yes, everybody's going to have moments like what you're just talking about with your first tenant. I mean, we all go through that. And just so yep. as a comparison, you know, the stock market goes up and down. People lose a lot. It's the same thing with real estate. You know, you have ups and downs, but it doesn't mean that you have to run from it. Oh, this doesn't work. And so here you are today. Now, I just want to say that just for the listeners that don't know why the 2 year mark was happening before with the single family homes when you're moving 2 years, that's a tax strategy so that you don't pay a capital gains tax if it's a residence. Is that correct?
Right. And also that was when the market crashed in 2008. Yeah. I think what we could have sold for at the time was $60,000 less than and that was a lot of money for us at the time. That would have been a huge
huge loss. That it just was not worth it. And at times like that too, it's when you, that's like just the same like the stock market. You don't sell, you hang on to it, you put a renter in there, and you have, somehow your mortgage isn't going to go up just because the market plummeted. You're responsible for your mortgage. Yep. Continue paying and wait for it to ride out. That's what happens. So many people panic when that happens, because there are markets like Arizona is one of those places where it does, it's almost like its own little world in the real estate. It goes up and down. Hawaii is very similar. I looked to buying a property in Hawaii, same thing. Oh, don't buy this time of the year. It'll go back down. And so it's like this little up and down and up and down. And so
that is like a dream place.
it's just stunning. Stunning. All right. So now I want to jump into a couple of things. What was the biggest financial lesson that you've learned? If you were able to look back in your life, if you knew, what would be something that you would say that if I knew this, maybe I would have done something differently?
Honestly, and this is going to sound horrible, but I probably would not have gone to grad school. I would have just learned more about real estate earlier on. At the end of the day, it was really, I didn't love being a PA. It was, there's only so much you can do against this healthcare system. It's really hard to make people, responsible for their own health because you can tell them this is what you need to do. But at the end of the day, so it was not everything I had thought that would be. So I probably would have, not gone to grad school and then put that into, learning more earlier about about this.
I'm finding more and more people are not wanting to put so much money into education let me correct that as I'm moving along in that statement. Education is key, but do we have to spend so much money on institutional education that what are our students coming out of these colleges with in order to go into the workplace to be able to pay back those loans?
With a huge amount of debt.
Huge amount of debt. There's an imbalance in that. It's sad because college is so much about discovering who you are in a safe place.
Right.
To be a young adult thinking you're not the boss of me. I have my own rules now.
Oh, you sound that sounds just like my 20-year-old son. Yes.
That's me. I know how to live, but at the same time, you're living in a dorm. Even though there's a cafeteria, all the food is made for you. You're going there, but it's like, I can eat what I want.
Yeah.
Granted, I will say that, I grew up on a farm. We learned how to be very self-sufficient.
Oh, I love that. I did not know that.
Yeah. And ironically, here I have had a landscaping business as well for 33 years, but I love it. Totally love it. Our upbringing and what we surround ourselves with really has a great influence on how we look at money and what we look like. This is what we're supposed to do. So it sounds like in your family, going to college is what you were supposed to do.
Yeah. And it's hard for me to break that with my own kids too, because, at the time, there's a lot of shade I definitely have for my own parents. But the one thing that, they did value having an education and, because they really did think, and at the time, that's how you were successful in life. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of hard to get out of that mindset because, you know, our son wants to be an airline pilot. You no longer have to go to college for it. But we're like, oh, go ahead and get a business degree. So, you know, you can help us with our real estate and get your ratings at the same time. But it's really hard to kind of get yourself out of that mindset. Like, why are you going to college? What are, and not to say that like going to college is all about the academics, because it's not. You're right. You absolutely, you know, discover who you are, hopefully meet a diverse group of people, all the other social aspects that come with it, and, you know, growing up and becoming, you know, hopefully a functioning member of society.
Right.
But it is hard to break that you, because I feel like, you know, in our generation, if you didn't go to college, it was kind of looked down upon. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, like, you can't really tell like who did and who didn't. It doesn't, because, you know, there's 20-year-olds who have amazing businesses that they're running themselves, and they, education for sure. Education is priceless. How you obtain that? Do you go to a bunch of masterminds? Do you, you know, meet people who are in successful businesses that you will maybe mentor you and learn from? I don't know. It's, but it is hard as a parent to get yourself out of that trap of my kids need to go to college, because maybe they don't.
And, you know, sometimes, even though, you know, I'm probably, you know, all parents probably kick me for saying this, sometimes you do need to listen to your kids and what they want.
Yeah.
If a kid doesn't want to go to college, particularly if you're footing the bill, that they're pretty much going to be like, no, I'm not cleaning my room. No, I'm not doing my homework. I don't want to be here anyway.
Right.
You know, listen to that. I think that the biggest thing that we're not really taught, because it is, school is still very old. Technology is changing constantly, but the school system and the method in which they teach is not keeping up with it. So it's like what's being taught is not matching what's real right now. So what purpose is that?
And right.
There is no purpose. Learning about history is great, but I would rather have finances be taught. You know,
right.
No one teaches that. And even in all of the finance groups that I'm in, I'm sitting in rooms with people that have been CEOs of banks. And the strategies and the things that we're learning about finance, they're like, I can't believe I was in this industry and I didn't even
know this. Well, and, you know, still like the new stuff that comes out, you know, you still have to learn. Like, it doesn't matter if you like just went to high school or you have a doctorate, like you still have to learn it with everyone else, you know, the new stuff, if you want to keep up with it. So I know it's hard. It's kind of hard to figure out like, okay, you want to go, and right now our son's very happy in college and, you know, so it's like, we can't take it away from him, but I'm kind of thinking with my other kids, like I think, you know, even with my daughter, like we've always talked about like, oh, when you go to college, but maybe we need to like, you know, start working on changing the conversation and saying, mm-hmm. what is it you're hoping to get out of college?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because maybe you don't.
Maybe it's part-time. Maybe it's not full-time. Maybe it's occasional. Maybe it's a community college. Because
yeah.
In the end, when I'm walking anywhere, going into any of my meetups or talking to people, you know, the only thing when people ask, you know, like if you happen to mention it, you have a college degree, they're like, oh, I know so-and-so that went there. No one's saying, can I see your graduation certificate, please? Can I see where you went to school? It's more
right.
Like what you do with the knowledge that you have and who you are in the world. And that's what makes you successful in that.
Absolutely.
Sense. You know?
Absolutely.
And it's about, if you love what you do, you will succeed. And success is defined by each individual person.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I want to touch on something that we were talking about before, which is, I think, is fantastic. And the reason I want to bring up the airplane that you all just purchased is because people that don't, first of all, I don't fly. I don't ever desire to have an airplane. It's not my
me either.
Sometimes I wish I had a helicopter to jump from point A to point B, but you know, it's like, okay. But some people may like, but there's a way, because you would think that I could never do that. It could be a dream, but it's so possible. So let's talk about the strategy that you all ended up getting an airplane. And you have to bring your son into this, because I think this is fabulous as well.
Right.
So yeah, tell us about that.
Okay, so our son is definitely following in his dad's footsteps, and he wants to be a pilot too. So my husband figured out that his flight training is so expensive. It's probably more expensive than college. So my husband figured out that if we buy a plane, it's actually cheaper than renting the plane, because, you know, you pay per hour at the flight schools.
Mm-hmm.
And this way you're maintaining your plane too, because he was constantly having his lessons canceled. Stuff was getting, because this was breaking, that was breaking. And especially with all the recent accidents, like, I want to know that it's maintained by the best person out there, right?
That's a little nerve-wracking, just that alone.
So this way, like, you know, we have a wonderful mechanic. We've known him for years. So we bought a plane, and this was, I did not like happily agree to this. I was kicking and screaming about it, but we're sitting down with our CPA, and we have a wonderful CPA. He specializes in people with real estate, and definitely, like, you know, we plan our tax strategy with him. With, you know, he tells us, like, this is what you should do this year. This is what you should. And I'm kicking and screaming and rolling my eyes about, you know, my husband's like, well, you know, our son is doing this. I need to look into a plane. And he goes, oh, not a problem at all. What we're going to do, you are buying this plane. As long as, you know, Ryan has to have like so many cross country hours to do this. And, you know, luckily Trevor can do that with him. He said, are you going to go and visit your properties? Because we do visit our properties, of course. We like being more hands-on owners anyways. He said, well, you can lease it back to yourself when you go visit your properties. And I hadn't even like considered. And so at this point, I was very still like, I mean, I did not love that we were getting this. I still don't love it, but... you know, he's like, oh, this absolutely can work out for you, because first of all, you're saving money on the flight lessons. And second of all, you lease this back to yourself to visit your properties. I think Brian has to get 150 hours or something for his next, don't quote me on that. I'm not the pilot, but it's a lot of hours. I mean, why not go visit our properties? And then we also write that off. I had no idea. So, you know, the accountant's getting all excited. I love him, by the way, if you're looking for anyone. He's local to us. I know, like, that was kind of a sticking point for me. I wanted somebody we could sit down with face to face. But, you know, I'm happy. I would recommend him to anyone. But he is like, yeah, this works. Like, there's no reason not to do this. You know, in my mind, I'm like,
right. And you know what, like with anything, any kind of real estate, if it's not for you, it's an asset that you can actually sell.
And so that is one of our agreements for my anxiety, is that, you know, after Ryan finishes his ratings, but, you know, just the way that with what we buy industrially, our industrial assets, most of them aren't here. Like, nothing underwrites in Phoenix right now. You know, we have a certain buy box, and part of that buy box is there has to be a standalone industry. You know, we have to have so much transportation going in and out of it, which is why we have the one in North Dakota. And then we have one in Savannah and one in North Carolina. We are hands-on owners, and we do want to visit them. I was just in Atlanta. We have a multifamily property there last week. 2 weeks before that, we were in North Dakota. So we do visit these properties. So why not fly there.
Let me put another little bug in your ear that your husband might get really excited about. Recently, I was talking to someone whose husband is also a pilot, and they are looking into, like, they've by flying all over. He does a lot of private jet piloting for people. And he came across that there's such a need for people that have their private planes, a place to park them, place to store them, and also a place when they fly to whatever destination to be able to have office space to work. Because they get there, they need to do work before they do whatever it is they need to do. And then they go home with their plane. But so runways and airplane hangars with office space is something that is very much needed. They also do memberships. You can subscribe, be subscription memberships. It's a whole network out there. Just to like, think about this, you know, this is a really interesting thing. I would suggest to have your husband start talking to people.
Heard a little bit. I will definitely mention that to him. I have heard that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so much out there that
isn't there?
And that's the thing is like, you don't have, if there's a niche in real estate that doesn't resonate with you, it doesn't mean real estate isn't for you. Maybe that niche just isn't for you.
Exactly.
Whatever. But there's so much you can do out there that sometimes I kind of can be a bit ADD at times and I get a bit overwhelmed because I'm like, oh, this sounds really cool. That sounds really cool. I want to learn more about this. I want to learn more about that. And then I'm like, just thinking about it and I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm there with you too, because when starting off in this and then you hear somebody has closed on a deal and, you know, someone that might be posting in a Facebook group, it's like, oh, maybe I should do that instead. And
right?
I find that, you know, all right, focus in, narrow in on something that really appeals to me. And what is it? Find the why behind it. And not just do it just because it's under the umbrella of real estate, but really find, is there a big why behind it? For instance, I went into multifamily because I wanted to buy more single family because I hold the notes for inexpensive houses between 30 and 50K to people that the banks, there's like a gap in the banking system.
And that's something else I want to do more.
Oh, well, we'll talk after this, but this is my passion because I know when I went to buy my house in 1995, 96, I was looking, no one would give me a mortgage because my business wasn't seasoned enough, even though I was paying way more than what my mortgage cost would have been. And that's what kind of got me by default, but in a wonderful way, into real estate. And I've never forgotten that feeling. I was told, literally, you've got the financials. All you need is a name and a W-2 to be a cosigner, and we're good to go. That was so humiliating. That was so frustrating. And I've never forgotten that, as well as the fact that everybody should be given a chance. And I understand the concept of buying a home, being a tenant and buying a home and the responsibilities, because I'm a contractor. I know that things break. It's constantly, you're always a little bit here and there, you're doing something. But there's a gap, and I think the housing crisis could really change in America if we filled this gap somehow. And I just hope, you know, maybe one house at a time, I'm able to help people do that. This is the thing, the big why for me that is very, very strong, that keeps me in real estate and exploring different avenues to make more money to bring and put into that business. But when I have, for instance, my properties, the husband and wife team, I'm not sure their age, but the husband said to me as they were, you know, going back and forth in text and sending me back the contracts, my wife is so happy she gets to have her own vegetable garden and a yard for the first time.
That's, oh, I love that.
Just sends chills down my spine, because that's a something that just brings such joy and peace to someone.
Yes.
And having the stability and knowing that she can step outside and just, I can plant tomatoes. I can be self-sufficient. My life is changing. Her life is changing. Their life is changing in such a way that no one would ever really know until you live it. And I love vicariously living and creating these little fantasies in my head about seeing her going out and picking the tomatoes. But that's my why for real estate. And I think that when we find those whys in whatever financial journey we go, if we find that deep core, keep that in mind. And then the fear of missing out will lessen because you're attaching it to what isn't really important in that. But it doesn't mean we still can't observe and watch and learn.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you never know what'll resonate. You know, just because something isn't for you at this moment doesn't mean it's not for you later.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'm very big on it's not everything is for everyone at this time. It doesn't mean that later it's not for you. Or
so my last question before we wrap up is, so now that you're at this place to be able to buy this plane, is there, what do you do in your life to make sure that now that you've created this financial journey that seems like a very wonderful opening, growing journey, to not exceed the almost like living a lifestyle as opposed to continuing to grow financially, you know, and getting caught up in the, wow, we've got this money now. Wow, why don't we try this and that? And like, how do you distinguish between getting bigger with the stuff that obviously always costs more? The bigger our lives get, the more expenses that we have, and finding that balance.
That is hard. And I do think about that pretty like regularly. I think we recently bought a new house. We've been here like a year and a half, a bigger house. We have four kids and, you know, we love having the friends over and, you know, knowing the friends. And our last house that we had was probably my favorite house that I've ever lived in. It was a decent size. It wasn't a super small or whatever, but we moved into this house and I have the hardest time keeping it clean. The kids don't want to help me. And so I think I am not a connoisseur of things. I definitely am more like experience driven. So things aren't necessarily something that holds a place for me. I was on, we're in another mastermind besides the one that you were in. And we were talking about like gift giving. And somebody's like, oh, well, what's the favorite gift anyone's given you? And I'm like, I have to think about that because I'm not like, that's not my love language. Is mm-hmm. I love giving to other people, but for myself, that's not necessarily. But I don't ever want to not be like a person either. My son, like when he went to ASU, he met all of these, you know, like family office type kids and stuff. And just the reality is like definitely not our reality. And I was like, but at the end of the day, what they're looking for is they want you as their friend. That's what we all want, right? We all want, well, at least I do. And I think we all want relationships and we all want to feel connected to people. So to me, like that's always been the most important thing. It's having like people connections and being, so I guess things aren't, no, that's not to say like, we have a trip to Paris coming up and I'm so excited for it. And this is probably like our last really big family trip because our son is, he's even coming back a little bit early because it's his birthday and he wants to be with his friends. And understandably so. I mean, I remember, yeah. I'm sure you do too, right? But this is probably like our last really big like hurrah. I don't know. And I do see how people get like very caught up in stuff. But I love how like, you know, the thrifting culture is huge right now. Like I would, it takes a lot of time because you don't always find what you want. So I think my why has always been more relationship driven than anything else. Because even though you want like a certain amount of money or you want certain, I feel like really what we're all aiming for is time freedom, right? To do, people think that, and it's, I guess it is true because you need money to have time freedom. But at the end of the day, I don't want time freedom so that I can go shopping, or, you know, not to say that I don't like shopping, because of course, I mean, we all like shopping to an extent because there's something you want, but you want time. Like if you were to say, like, pick your, you know, I think Rod at what some of the, you know, he tells us to pick our design our 24 hours. Mm-hmm. It was nothing. There was never ever anything that had stuff in it to me. It was always like, these are the people I want in my 24 hours. These are the things I want to do. So money gives you time freedom to pursue with your close relationships or giving back. Because stuff is just stuff at the end of the day, right? Like,
it's so true. It's experience that gives us the memories.
Yeah.
Not even, so as an example, if someone were to be all into cars or something, and no judgment on that,
right,
it's the experience of sitting in the car and smelling, whether it be a vintage car and you're smelling the, you know, the old, it's kind of a funny smell, but it is, it's like you can smell the gasoline because of the carburetor and the smell of the exhaust, or in a brand new car that you smell the new smells of the fabrics and things they have in there. It's not, and the feel of what it feels like to sit and hold the steering wheel or something like that. It's not the object itself. It's
in the community that's around, you know, because I feel like I'm not a car person, but I feel like there's always this community of, you know, they all park next to each other. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, every weekend they're doing, you know, I don't know. Like, that's not a, and for me, like my dream car was having like a Tesla, because I feel like I am, you know, doing something good for the environment. I don't know if that, I've heard, like, now that I have one, I've heard maybe not, but that's why that was important to me and I love not getting gas too, you know, I felt like I was doing something environmentally responsible. I don't know if that's still, I've heard, you know, the energy from fossil, you know, all of that, but yeah, I think, you know, at the end of the day, we all want the same connection.
I agree. And that's why something that I've mentioned before in other podcasts is that finding your freedom number doesn't have to be enough to buy your own island. It doesn't have to be this outrageous thing. It just needs to exceed your expenses and have a little cushion to be able to experience what you like. And for some, that could be multi-millions of dollars.
Right.
And others could simply be making $150,000 a year. And that is time freedom. It's really to the individual. And that's one of the things that I'm really trying to stress, because people always are getting addicted to more. I got to be somewhere else. And listen, I'm the biggest guilty of that, thinking, you know, I got this, now I'm here. What's next? Well, when is next good enough to then make something next be more of an experience, you know?
Well, because we're all
definition.
You know, a couple of years ago, we did this mastermind. We hiked. It was crazy. I was not at the same level as everyone. But somebody said to me there, they said, what's your number? And I can't even remember what it was at the time. But I felt like in my mind, it was something that's always changing, right? And he's like, because I was like, well, I think it used to be this, but now it's this. And he said, stop moving the goalpost. Why do you keep moving the goalpost? And I said, now, I would argue that maybe like inflation makes you move it to an extent,
the price of
whatever. But if you're designing the life that you want, there's whatever that you need in that to cover your expenses, cover the things that are important to you. And in my ideal life, I have a big garden, you know, or whatever. So you're covering that. And mm-hmm. obviously, you know, I do have four kids, and there are certain things I want for grandkids to be able to provide. But mm-hmm. If you're always moving the goalposts, and obviously I struggle with this just as much as everyone else, but there does have to become a point where you're like, okay, that I'm at my goal. This is what we said.
Yeah.
You know, but there is human nature involved, I guess.
Yes, it's so true. Well, Janet, it's been so really wonderful having you on the podcast. If our listeners wanted to reach out to you, how would they reach out to you and talk to you more about making airplane hangers? And
I'm going to tell them you said that.
Yes.
So on Instagram, I am Mrs. Pilot Investor, and my husband is the Pilot Investor. Also, I'm my age, and so I think, you know, my son tells me Facebook is very uncool. I'm Shannon Sherman on Facebook, but that's primarily where I am.
Hey, Mom.
Right. Well, there are so many platforms, and it's like you can't keep up with everything, so you kind of have to pick.
I know. I'm totally right there with you. I've accepted the fact that I'm not going to always be trendy, but with the retro of time, I become trendy again.
I think you're very trendy because, like, you've got the dreads going, and then you got the super cool like artwork that you did in the background. I think you're very cool. I think you're right now.
Thank you so much. This has been a pleasure having you on. Thank you so much for sharing your verbal thoughts and also your abundance. I'm just so happy to have had you on and hear about your life. Excellent. We've run out of time. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on the Money Flow Genie podcast. And remember, do something today that your future self will thank you for, because you are your own genie in the bottle. I want to thank you all for listening. All right. Have a good day.
The info in this podcast is straight from our personal experiences. You alone possess the power to manifest your desires. You are the genie in the bottle, awaiting your command. So ask smart questions. We're not licensed financial pros, so be sure to consult with a licensed professional, attorney, or tax consultant.